Hey, everybody. It's good to be together with you again. And, you know, you can see I have my two sons here with me today. Michael is our creative and worship pastor, and Jeffrey has been our Next Gen pastor, though we've kind of pulled him into department head meetings, and he's real involved in the whole family ministry department right now. But we're going to discuss today bringing people from the point they're guests to a point they connect well with the body, to a point that we see them maturing and fulfilling the potential they have in Christ. And I can honestly say there's no hyperbole in the, no, I can't say it. I just thought I could say it. I could try to say there's no hyperbole in this statement. And that is, I'm excited. And the reason is our process is going to be really clear for you today. And I know as a pastor, I love whenever we can sit down and our processes are clear and I can get some tweaks or at least have some things I can consider. And guys, honestly, tweaking processes makes such a difference. It was so exciting to see a couple hundred people receive Christ at Good Friday and Easter, and then to see 70 people, I wish it was 700 people, 70 people baptized the next week. And honestly, a lot of it was just better intentionality and focus, right? Yeah, we just saw something really happen. Cool. You preached instead of me Friday night. That might have been why more people got saved. I don't know.
No, Good Friday. So we're all sinners. Everybody's like, I need to be saved.
Well, you know, Rick Warren says this. He says that administration won't grow the church, but it will hinder the growth of it.
That's good.
And he says it's like your shoe. It's not going to grow your foot, but it sure can tell the foot how big it can grow.
Yeah. Right.
And so today, that's why this is important, because I don't know where the momentum is in your church. That's probably worth a whole nother seminar, just talking about creating kingdom momentum in our counties. But I know that, you know, we live in a society where people's commitment isn't like what it was when I was a kid.
Right.
I mean, just on the family front, people tend to walk away instead of work through things right now. And so we have to have a real good process for helping people connect our family. So we're going to start by welcoming new members of Significant Church. We voted Jeffrey does that this week. Yes. So Jeffrey, you want to welcome everybody?
I'm going to do my best. If I butcher your name, I'm sorry. Welcome, Anna Santiago. Chris, do I say where they're from as well, or just their names?
It's up on the screen.
Chris Peterson, Daniel Peavy, Frank Jones, Garney Davis Jr., Imran Fazal, I'm sorry, man, and Jenna Weberdink. That's my best try. Oh, more. We got a lot of ads. Jim Borer, Ken Alford, Mark Rockwood, Michael Chambers, Mike Rose, Nathan Scroggins, Richard Rizzi. And that's it. Welcome. Yeah. We're glad that you're here. Again, if I butchered your name, please forgive me. But we're so glad to have you part of the Sig Church Network.
Yeah, so Imran Fazal is kind of like the Pope of Pakistan. You just blew his name.
That was
so
a bad name.
He's never going to want you to be on TV. He's never going to invite you to do anything. So anyway.
I apologize.
That's all right. You did great. I fight that battle every weekend.
They told me like 30 seconds ago that I was doing it.
That's why I give your mom that part of service, right?
Yeah.
So, but anyway, hey, let's start at the beginning. Let's start with the guest experience. And Jeff, let's start with you.
Guest
comes on the lot, right?
So a guest comes on the lot. This is a stat. I think it's kind of crazy. It says, according to church leadership experts, most people decide whether they'll come back to a church within the first 7 to 10 minutes of driving into the parking lot. The reason that's scary, especially as a pastor, because you work a long week to make sure that sermon's good. But that sermon don't happen the first 7 to 10 minutes of them standing in the parking lot. And that's kind of a like, oh, wait, so there's a lot of other things that need attention, not just what happens in here. And I think this is a common way of it being explained. I've heard it from several different people that I really respect. But one of the best ways to think about it is kind of like a restaurant, you know? If you go to a restaurant, and first of all, you can't find where to park. And then you finally get parking, it's a long walk, and it's not clear, like, what door do I go in? Is it the back? Is this the front? Is this the back? Where do I go? And then finally, you get in the building, you got to use the restroom real quick before service, so you go in there, but it smells bad. I don't know what you're serving at your coffee shop, but it smells bad. And then all of this stuff, I mean, you come to the auditorium, It's hard to find a place to sit. It's dark. There's no ushers helping you. Okay, even if worship is good, even if the sermon is amazing, it's going to affect your opinion of how you... You know, oh, I switched my restaurant metaphor midway to a church.
Yeah, I was thinking.
But you get this.
You're at least going to consider something else, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You might come back. Like, if the food is really good, I might be like, you know what? I'm going to brave the storm. But I'd still rather not have to jump through all the other hurdles.
Right.
And I think
I took Alan Hickman to a Mexican restaurant where the goal wasn't to sell food. It was to sell drugs out of the restaurant. So, Alan, if you're watching, you're probably really connecting with this right now. we didn't realize it until we got done.
But it's exactly.
He went authentic Mexican. I took him down to Port Lavaca because it was Easter weekend and everything was closed. And we ended up in a restaurant. All right, go ahead.
And they've never been back. Or they have, and pray for them. So the first 7 to 10 minutes is just really like, what's going on? What's happening? And so some of the things that are just so important to think about are things like your parking lot situation, the lobbies. What does it look like? What does it smell like? What does it sound like? Greeters. Is there clear signage? How does the check-in go if people have kids? Is it smooth or is it like, oh, we got to check the kids in? Coffee shop. Is it, you know, good coffee? Is it fairly priced? All of that stuff really does matter. And so when you're thinking about just the first time guest, you're not even trying to connect them anywhere yet. You're just wanting them to say, this is a place that I feel like I could connect. Now, some of the trouble with this, in my opinion, is that when you have goals, right, they can be quantitative or quantitative or qualitative. And quantitative's easy. It's like, well, either this amount of number came or it didn't. Like, it's easy. Qualitative are much harder to gauge. They can be subject to different opinions. Like, did that feel good? One person can be like, yeah. Another person like, no, it's horrible. And so something that I'm learning is, like, to make a qualitative goal feel, I mean, a quantitative, no, qualitative goal feel the way you want, it almost always helps to have checklists. So to say, like, okay, well, if I want it to feel like this when they come in and get greeted, then here's the checklist. We need two greeters here. We need a lobby person here. Right. We need this. And then it just doesn't feel so bare minimum. But the end goal of what I'm saying is all of these things have to be thought about with a pretty good amount of detail if you want people to come and feel like, man, in the first 7-10 minutes, I could belong here.
Right. Yeah. You know, I heard one pastor say it this way, and I loved it. He said, in your mind, just plan for at least 3 to 4 great connects before they sit in the chair. So it might be more, but parking is always the first connect, right? That's either good or bad. And then your lobby greeters are usually your second connect. Registration for kids is your third connect. Coffee shop may not be a fourth connect. I mean, I know for us, you know, we sell about 75 cents a coffee for everybody who comes, and we give a ton of free coffee. So I have highly caffeinated people, like most pastors that I'm talking to whenever they come in. But then I didn't signage. I thought that was great. I'm just rehearsing them. And then one thing we added were section hosts. And section hosts are just people that are in the same section every week, and it helps if you can get people to sit in the same section because it helps create a sense of community. So, again, think through your parking, through your lobbies, through your greeters, through your check-in, through your signage, through your coffee shop. And then there's some people who just feel like it's their job to make people feel really welcome. You know, Tamara and I go visit a church once a year. And the reason I do that is I always come home with something that helps me get a little bit better. And if we're not careful, like you said, G, we're working on our sermon and we're forgetting all this stuff's playing out. So, Mike, how do we identify guests?
Yeah, I think that's an important question for sure, because we definitely want guests to have a great experience. And we want to be able to just help them have a great experience and be able to connect them in a way that's going to help, you know, like we're talking about, become connected and matured. So that really does start with identifying them, right? People probably aren't going to just walk into your church and just kind of scream out, hey, I'm new, like, come help me, you know? So how do we find those people? How do we how do we help them just have a great experience?
I mean, I've been at 30-some years, less now than ever.
Yeah. You can't assume people are going to, you know, want to just walk up to somebody and just start talking to them and say, I'm new or, you know, so you want to make that really easy for people. And I think it really does start with the parking lot, just like you said. Yeah. So one thing that we do is we have guest parking. You know, if you're new, first-time guest, we have a parking spot for you. And so come park, and as soon as you do, we know, hey, this person is a guest. We're going to treat them like a guest. We're going to help make sure they know where to go and get everything that they need. So that's one really quick way to know if someone's a guest, guest parking. And a lot of these things that I'm going to say, some of you guys, a lot of you guys are probably doing these things. Some of you guys may have great ideas as well. So one thing we love about these, if you have some ideas, drop them in the chat, or if you know you have a question or anything, drop them in the chat. But that's, you know, where we can start is just with parking, you know. The second, another thing that I think is important that we do here is we have people throughout the campus with lanyards on that says, how can I help? You know, if you're at a store or somewhere and, you know, you have a question, you're not going to just walk up to somebody and, hey, you know, you want to know someone who works there, someone who's there to help. So having people throughout the campus who are easy to recognize and identify so that if a new person is here and has a question, they know they can just go up to them and ask, hey, where do I go? Hey, where do I check my kids in? We have something called a welcome hub, which is a place for anyone who's new that has any kind of questions. We have people back at our welcome hub. They can go back there, get any questions answered, you know, get information on the church. They can get a tour. So these people can help lead them to our welcome hub. So just having that really easily identifiable. You know, you have kid check-in.
Yep.
So that's another way if someone's checking in and you know they've never checked in a kid before, they're new. Well, having someone there at the check-in system who can help with guests, who can say, oh, you know what, it's your first time. We're going to take you back there and we're going to show you the kids area. Or we're going to, you know, so that's another, those three right there that I just talked about, that's before you even get into the sanctuary. And already you've had the opportunity to identify guests, to serve them well. And then, you know, when you get into the service, I think it's important to think about how you address guests. You know, that's something that we do every service that we have. We get up and we welcome our guests. We let them know that we're so thankful that they're here. Excuse me. We're so thankful that they're here. And, you know, we've kind of really worked hard. You've led us to work hard to build that into the culture of our church. And we get excited when guests come. If you're joining us for the first time, or maybe you haven't been here very long, we're excited you're here. And we all give them a hand. And we want our church to know, man, that
we want the person who brought the guest to be smiling.
Exactly.
If the person who brought them smiling, you're doing it good.
We celebrate that. So, so I think that's important, you know, working to build that kind of culture where, man, we're excited that guests come. And not just from the stage, but everybody here knows that's a value. That's valuable to us. But then using that moment to help get guests connected. So there's a lot of ways that we can do this. And I think of Amazon, the Amazon principle. I don't know how many of you guys have bought things off of Amazon just because it's so easy, right? It's a one-click kind of thing and you're done.
Every week.
Yeah. And so, you know, the more hindrances that we can remove for people being able to, you know, really give us their information so that we can connect them, connect with them, the better. So, you know, we always let them know, hey, we want to serve you. You know, we want to be here for you. And the best way to do that is this. And we do a few things whenever we welcome guests. We have the option where you can text. We use ClearStream is what we use, where you can just text. I'm new or something like that, and you know we can start a conversation with them. We have QR codes on the seat backs on all of our seats, and that just takes you to a link that has, you know, all kinds of options for them, whether it's I'm new, baptism, salvation. So we can use those for anything, and those are free, so those are great. And then of course we have, you know, the old school cards as well with pens at every seat back if you want to fill out a card and let us know you're new. But we want to do everything we can to reach them where they're at. You know, however you want to let us know, we don't want any kind of barriers or any kind of hindrances. We want to make it really easy. So that's another opportunity right there that we can, you know, hey, know that these are guests and we can identify them. And then there's a few other things that happen in service. We have giving. You know, if someone's giving for the first time, you know, we know, hey, this is someone who's either new or who's really bought in at a new level. Yeah. So we get that as well. And then we have salvation cards. You know, if someone gives their life to Jesus, you know, we've really been trying to just encourage them, and you know, their first step of obedience to Jesus, which is baptism. Mm-hmm. And so those things right there also help us know. So I just think it's really important that we have those things in place so that if people are coming for the first time or making a big decision for the first time, we can easily know that, grab them by the hand, and help, you know, walk into that next season.
Yeah, and again, the goal is to connect so well with the guests those first 7 minutes, like you talked about, that they give us a shot, and then take them from guest to connection. You guys want to hear the worst thing I ever did? I was thinking about that.
The worst thing you ever did? Here?
Yeah. Pastors love hearing stuff like this, but we were starting to grow, and I thought about, you know, when older guests come, you know, I want to make sure they know that this church is, you know, because I was young.
Church for
you
all
know.
Ages.
Yeah, we were. And so, church. And we had a horrible parking lot. We had we had limestone. That's what, yeah. And so people would get taller
slippery
as they walked into church
tough.
On a rainy day because the limestone would get on their shoes. But anyway, so I said to my secretary, we didn't have admin assistants back then, we had secretaries. And I said to her, listen, let's put an ad in the paper, in the bulletin, and let's just tell all the seniors that we're going to have an escort for them if they want one. And so I was going to get young people to park their cars. And she did it. And then about 2 hours later, she came off and she said, Pastor, are you sure you want to call it an escort? And I started cracking up. But anyway, yeah, kind of a bad word to use. But anyway, you guys are going to laugh at this because you know this is your dad. I bullet point things because I'm the guy that walks through an airport and leaves something there if I don't have checklists. And so check-in, cards, text, QR codes, giving, signage, welcome hubs, using salvation, baptism. What we're trying to do with all these things is say, okay, how can we start a conversation with these people? And for sure, you start a conversation so many different ways now. You know, this is the generation of options. Right. And so you have to give them all the options and then figure out the best way to connect. But after that, we go to the follow-up stage. And for us, it starts with a text. Most people, I think, would rather be texted than called. Mm-hmm. But what we do is we actually do videos on the text. Mm-hmm. Because with a video, you can show the campus, you can show things that are appealing and things that you think they really want to experience. So we send a text. We also send a letter. And Michael talked about having cards. It always humors me to see how people sign up for baptism because there's some people who just want to use a card. Yep. There's some people want to use a QR code, some that want to use Clearstream like you talked about. But we do send a letter and we text a video. You know what we did when I first started pastoring? This is going to make you laugh. We had cookies. We delivered cookies to their door.
Oh, that's cool.
And so it
that
just awesome. Just tells you how... Yeah. No, it was fun. And we had cookie delivery teams. But nowadays, if you knock on people's doors, they look at you funny.
Yeah.
They wonder, are the cookies safe? So it kind of changed. But anyway, here's the goal. We want to find out where they are and how we can serve them.
Right.
So we want to be aware of their time. People are busier than ever. So they get a text from us. It's a cool video. We hope it starts a conversation. And then we actually follow people for a couple of months because people don't make decisions right away. And, you know, honestly, a lot of people do. A lot of people come and say, this is going to be my church, you know.
Right.
But there's a lot of people that they're going to obviously look at other churches. They're going to church date for a while, right? And so you just want to stay in touch. And sometimes you impress them through how you're staying in touch. So we have a very designed process for that 6 to 8 weeks. And I would just say this, in a smaller market, there are fewer churches to visit. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that might adjust your time in a bigger market. You might have more churches that they visit. But our goal is to get 50% of our visitors to a fourth visit. And I think the bigger the market, probably the harder that is, too. But we're able to hit that most of the time, where we get 50% of our guests to a fourth visit. But the real goal is we want to get them to next steps. And here's the reason for that. Everybody who comes to your church has a culture regarding their life. And so for me, I grew up in a Catholic family and I went to church every Sunday. So if I joined your church, I'd be coming every Sunday. That's what we did. I think I read where 30% of church members come weekly, 40% come a couple times a month now, and then another 30% might come once a month. So what you're trying to do, once they come, you don't lose them those first 7 to 10 minutes, You figured out a way to connect with them and start a conversation. Yeah. What you're trying to do is help them develop a culture in their life that causes them to get everything out of church that God wants them to get out of church. That's for the sure. goal. So that takes us to our next step. Okay, mm-hmm. so the guest is good. We're connected. Jeff, what happens next?
For sure. Well, I've heard from a lot of different people, when you think about people in your church, you can think about them kind of three levels of bought in. There's attending, serving, and giving, right? Mm-hmm. And so next steps really is such a helpful way, not just for the church, but like for people. Let me tell you when my perspective on this shifted. I grew up in this church pretty much my whole life. I knew everybody. I knew where to go. I knew what room 113 was. I knew where they stored the nursery snacks. I knew all of that. You know the ins and outs.
You knew
then,
how to break in.
100%. I knew which doors you could slide a credit card in and get right in and get whatever you needed to get. But when I moved to Tulsa and when I moved to Los Angeles, going to a church, completely different experience. Because you go in and you're like, I don't even know who to talk to about getting involved. I don't even know where I want to get involved. I don't know which, like, departments would I, you know, relate better with, the kids pastor or the youth pastor. I don't know any of that. Back in my home church, I knew everything. And now I'm so confused. And that's when I started to realize, like, man, helping people take their next step and being unapologetically clear is one of the kindest things you can do for somebody who's new to church. That's so good. when you help somebody feel like, hey, you're here, what is your next step? And you, like, for us, we've done it in different ways where we've landed and where we're sticking to, I think, is a weekly 30-minute class right after both of our services, 9 or 11. People don't have to sign up. We talk about it. We tell them, if you're interested in taking your next step, here's where you go. And basically, I'll just give you the outline. This is not new to us. This, many people do it like this, but I think it's a good model. There's 4 weeks, right? The first one is just information about your church. If people want to take their next step, a lot of times you have to build trust in that. So we'll talk about stuff like, what is the church government of this place? We publish our budget every year, and so we tell the people, this is how we spend the money that gets given here. Stuff like that that helps them be like, man, I like the vision. I like the mission. I trust this place. The second week isn't so much about them knowing their church. It's about them knowing them. So we help them discover their gifts. Like, where would I feel purposeful serving and helping? Because Jesus said, more blessed is it to give than it is to receive. We have to genuinely believe if our people are giving, they'll feel so satisfied. But they have to do it in a way that makes sense for their gifting. So we help them. On week 2, they have a little gifts test. They get to see it. The third week, it's all about developing in their leadership, which we'll talk more about that at the end of this. But then the fourth week is, okay, now after you've done all this, next steps class, where is your next step? Do you want to join a dream team? You want to get involved in a connect group? And I'll say this, at that point, there is a huge responsibility on whatever staff that oversees that department to make sure that the assimilation goes smooth. Because it's one thing to cultivate the desire and the spirit of somebody to be like, yes, I want to get involved. It's another thing to make sure that all those details and administration are taken care of very smoothly. Because people are like, yeah, I want to get involved. Well, who teaches them how to use Planning Center? That's what we use. Right. You know, who teaches them how the schedule looks like? Who introduces them to their leader? Who introduces them to the group chat that their team is going to use, or all of that stuff. So I would just encourage you, if you don't have good job descriptions for who's doing that stuff, do it, or else you're going to have a lot of desire, but then lack on the administration. It's kind of like what you said before, like, man, the administration won't grow it, but it can hinder it.
Right.
And so,
and I want to just let everybody know quick that you can go to our archives and the whole planning process of developing job descriptions. You can figure out how to do that in your church.
Right.
And I know for some pastors, your eyes get glazed over thinking about that stuff, but that's why we made it so simple, because your people are busy, and the clearer your systems are and the easier they can plug in. And the easier you can solve all the issues that keep them from saying, I really want to be a part of this family and grow,
right,
and the better off.
Right.
Absolutely. So I would just encourage you to really think about, how do we help people take their next step. And the next step model has worked for a lot of people. And, you know, it's clear on both the spirit side, like how do I want it to feel? And then the administration side, what are we communicating and how are we assimilating?
So. Yeah, that was really good. And one thing I'd just say, again, I'm going to go back and some of the guys my age are going to laugh, but what we did when our church started growing was I just had once a month where we welcomed all the guests and had fried chicken together. And we went around and I heard their stories. And a lot of them, you know, were getting saved in the church. And so it's just so good. And they would leave that time with me. Mm-hmm. And they would leave and they'd say, man, this feels like a family to me. I feel like I can be a part of this family. Yeah. So we felt like we succeeded doing that. So, you know, different sized churches, you may try different things that just work within your church. But the one thing I like about what you said is that what I didn't realize at that time was everything I did fed the spectator model of church. Mm-hmm. Of course, God had given me a word to build my church like Luke 14, where the poor got rich insights and the crippled found strength to walk into dreams, and or the crippled got healed, the lame got strength to walk into new dreams, and the blind saw the power of the gospel at work. So I was building a spectator church back then. Just come, let me convince you the gospel will change your life. But what you're talking about is going from a spectator to a participator church. Mm-hmm. And if all you do is the fried chicken, and if all you do is kind of win them to that, then you're not going to have all the programs. You're not going to have all the things that I'm so grateful we have in our church today. But believe it or not, people didn't have all that back then, right? Just like you didn't have Strength Finders, Enneagram, all the things that are great tools to help us build community and build staffs today. So that that was really helpful. You want them to connect, but you want them to start taking their place. And why don't you talk about our values real quick?
Yeah.
What the four values are.
So we talk about, you know, what do we exist to do, right? If you were to ask us at Faith Family, what, why are y'all here? We say, okay, we're here for four things. We want you to know God. That's primarily through weekend services. We want you to find life. And that's through fostering, like, really good prayer and Bible reading. And also through next steps, finding life within the body of Christ. So that's big. We want you to build relationships. And that's, you know, we're not made to do life alone. And then make a difference. So that's, at the end of the day, if we can do those four things really well, know God, find life, build relationships, make a difference, then as a church, we're going to feel like we're doing what God called us to do.
Yeah. And that's why Next Steps is important, is because a person that drives onto the parking lot because they think, you know what, I don't know what to do. Maybe God has the answers, you know, and they're not going to naturally do that kind of stuff on their own. But when they go through Next Steps, they see the value of it. They get a, quick route into it. So, so Michael, then, okay, so they join a team or they start attending a group. What happens from there?
Well, yeah. Can I go back just for just a second?
Yeah.
Because we're talking about really the goal of this being to be connected, to be participators, like you're talking about. And we all know Paul talks about how we all have a place in the body, right? So our goal is that everyone finds that place in the body because it, for one, it brings fulfillment into our life. But then for two, there's just a, another level of connect and ownership and belonging whenever you get to that level. So I was going to talk a little bit about Connect Group and Dream Team real quick. Because most of what we do we try to funnel it through Next Steps because there's such good training that happens. There's such good all that that happens. But we do have four times a year, so two each, where we have our Connect Group fairs. So twice a year we do our Connect Group fairs. Twice a year we do our Dream Team fairs. And this is just a fun thing that we do in our Connection Center. It's a big area in our church. And so for the Connect Group fair, we'll have all of our Connect Group leaders, and they'll put tables out in the Connection Center. They'll, you know, have fun, you know, building their displays. Maybe they'll have some candy or snacks or whatever. But basically you can go back there in the Connection Center and you can see all the different Connect Groups that we have going on in our church. So if you're not sure, you know, what kind of Connect Groups are there? What is a Connect Group like? You can meet the Connect Group leaders. You can see all the different, you know, a lot of them are Bible study based things, maybe studying the Gospels, studying Revelation, you know, whatever it is. We have financial based ones. We have, you know, like basketball, all kinds of interest Connect Groups. But it's just twice a year where we just let our church know, hey, we're having our Connect Group fair. Go back there, check it out. Gives you an opportunity to meet the Connect Group leaders. And then we do the same thing with our Dream Teams. You know, we have a Dream Team fair where, you know, sometimes depending on the size of your church, people may think, you know, well, they don't need me here. Mm-hmm. They got it covered, or I don't even know where I could get involved or who I would mm-hmm. jive with or relate with. And so we'll have all of our different dream teams back there in the Connection Center, and they'll, you know, have their tables and, you know, make them real fun. So you might have a media team over here. You might have the women's ministry, mm-hmm. all that different stuff. But we like to do that a couple times a year each, just so that, you know, we can get it as part of the life of our church. We can get our people back there, and they can just have a good environment to see everything. And not just, because it's one thing to have it on paper, but it's another thing to meet the people who are doing it, because the relationship side of it is so big. So that's another thing that we do. So that we do to really help connect people. And I think the whole connection step, you know, is done so well through connect groups and through dream teams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. There is one other thing we do, and some churches don't like it, but I'll just share it. And I did it because, you know, I saw a guy who's a superintendent of our school district, mm-hmm. and I saw him bringing his grandson to church, and he made sure his grandson loved children's church, and his, you know, his daughter was going through a divorce at the time. He's just being an incredible grandpa. But he's a superintendent of our school district. He's a busy, busy guy.
Yeah.
And I knew getting him on a dream team or a connect group might be a little bit difficult. Mm-hmm. We were actually like, he just got a $70 million bond passed and all the mm-hmm. construction is going on. So I started something called Life Care. And that's for people who are really in the church, and their giving is helping the church go. And I just want to make sure those people don't get overlooked. Yeah. So we have dream teams. We have connect groups. We have Life Care just for people like that. And so we talked about their guests. Now they're connected in a dream team, a connect group, or maybe Life Care. Again, that's not necessarily the ideal, because you're not using your gifts and things like you mm-hmm. would. But some people are just in different stages of life.
Sure.
Then how does the whole maturity thing happen? And this is something that I think, you know, really, really made pastoral ministry happy for me, good for me. And we're in a smaller city. I would have people, honestly, that would come by the house and ask me if they could move in with me. No, they did. One person asked if they could move in. Yeah, they said, I know you have a spare bedroom. You weren't born yet, you know. And my husband's treating me bad. Can I move in, you know? And so you're like trying to process all that. And so I can identify a little bit with Moses. He had a much bigger church than me. But when Moses said, you know, or when his father-in-law came and said, man, you're going to be a horrible father to my, or husband to my wife and and father to my grandkids if you keep operating with this model where you're trying to take care of all the needs of the people. So in that, and I think this is really interesting to me, is when Jethro talked to Moses and he said, you're going to wear yourself out, I think it is the Hebrew word, is you're going to start doing morally foolish things because you're tired. And I've seen pastors that I know were great guys make some bad decisions, and I know it was just the weight of their church on them.
Right.
So learning to just carry the weight and not feel responsible for everything mm-hmm. is important. So we do that through just using what we call the Moses model. We produced a video. You can use it at exchanges that really explains the Moses model for pastors.
Yeah.
But the Moses model is basically that you have captains and you have leaders. And every five leaders has a captain who's paying attention to their life and their calling and ministering to them. Every leader has 10 families. And in that system, it really doesn't matter how big things get. Every leader, you know, is going to have a captain. And every person in the church that becomes a member is going to have somebody who's a leader. So it's in the Bible and it works.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Sure. And that's really how community and care and all those things happen. Because what we're talking about that's the benefit of being connected really is that doing life with people, having people who are there, for, you know, caring for you, who are connecting to you. And so you might be thinking, okay, so how do we do that? Obviously, we can't do that, like you're saying, by ourselves as pastors. We can't care for every dream team member one-on-one. We can't. But we can through the captain and leader model. Mm-hmm. And now there is obviously a process to making sure that's happening, right? We can't just set it and forget it kind of thing.
Right,
like,
right.
Hey, here's the idea. Now go make it happen. So how do we do that is kind of the next question. So if we have our captains, you know, one captain over up to five leaders up to, you know, over 10 families. Mm-hmm. how do we then empower them and make sure that real community and care is happening? And we have three H's that we use because we all speak, so we like to keep everything consistent. Mm-hmm. But one of the H's is Heart for the House. That's what we call it. And what that is 3 times a year, 3 to 4 times a year. Really, it's 3 times a year, and the 4th time is normally like just an honor for our leaders where we have dinner and honor them. But the other 3 times a year, we get together with just our captains and our leaders, and we're all in one room, and Pastor Jim gets up, and he shares vision. He pours into them. He encourages them and just pours out vision. And then, we as staff, we're huddled with our captains and leaders as well after that, and we're, talking through things and encouraging them. So that happens with all of us together 3 to 4 times a year. Our second H is what we call hero meetings. This is where at least monthly we're getting with our captains, mm-hmm. and we're sitting down with our captains and we're checking in, and we're, checking in on them. We're also asking about their leaders, asking about, all the people under their leaders. And we're just making sure that we're staying connected. We're staying in the know. What do we need to know about what's going on in these care districts and in our dream teams? So that's happening at least once a month, depending on how many captains that you have. So we have our Heart for the House, our hero meetings, and the final thing we have is our huddles. So this is every time we get together for church, 15 minutes before we start serving, we huddle together. And so, every time we get together to huddle, we do 3 things. We share, care, and prayer. So share, it's great if it can come from a captain or a leader where we're together and share something. A lot of times what we do, actually, Pastor Jim sends out an email to all of our leaders.
Yeah, we study a book together. We give our leaders a chance to study the book, and I give them kind of a 450-word commentary on what the book meant to me, and so they can share that in their groups. And some of this we got from John Wesley. I read a book, England Before and After Wesley, and why Wesley is considered one of the most transformational leaders. And it basically, what it talked about is how the Reformation had already happened. So people knew truth.
Right.
But sociologically, they weren't relating. So in the Bible, you have soteriology, right? You're a seminary student. What that means is people might know theology, but they don't really know how to apply salvation in their life.
Right.
You have ecclesiology. They know the Bible some, but they don't know how to be the church. So what Wesley did was he started getting people to do the ecclesiology and soteriology kind of things. And it transformed culture before it was done. So whenever possible, we have ladies meet with ladies, men meet with men, because men aren't going to open up to ladies, or they shouldn't. Mm-hmm. And ladies open up to anybody. Just kidding. That's terrible. But anyway, we try to do that because the goal is that there's somebody in their life that sees what's going on and is helping to bring forth the potential God put in their heart. So.
Exactly. So we'll share from that, and we'll care. We'll just give people opportunity to share anything that they might need care for, and then we'll pray together. And so that gives us an opportunity every service they're serving that we're together, we're huddling. So I don't want to overload information, but the 4 H's are our heart for the house. That's all of our captains and leaders. Our hero meetings, which is us connecting with our captains, and then our huddles, which is when we're serving together, we're always huddling 15 mm-hmm. minutes before. And it's a good way to keep community and care happening.
Yeah, and not even just for services. If we have an event, we do it.
Yeah.
Because we want it to be so much a part of our culture. Mm-hmm. And like Michael said, we try to make it easy. That's why we use the H's and things. It just helps all of our people get it. And it helps us set a culture. But we're launching something new. And the reason I was excited about doing this today is because a lot of us are going into planning. We're trying to tweak some things. And I know most of you guys who listen, you do a lot of this.
Right.
But man, one or two little tweaks, like the baptism tweak we did this year, really caused a lot of people to be baptized mm-hmm. that weren't being baptized in the past. So, mm-hmm. Jeff, we're getting ready to do something new. Talk about it.
Yeah, so we've just really been trying to think about how do we not just ask our leaders to be good leaders and captains to be good captains, but how do we train them to do that? What is the process? And I'm not saying there's one right way to do it. This, what we're about to launch, I give a lot of credit to some people who helped me with it because I didn't come up with the idea myself or anything. But we're starting something called Leadership Academy. And basically what Leadership Academy is it's like a 12-week course offered in the spring and in the fall. Spring and fall, that there's a curriculum. And it's not necessarily stuff that you'd say to everybody on Sunday morning. It's stuff that you want to download straight into the heart of the leaders and the captains in your church. We had a talk one time. At one point, we did something called DBI, stands for Destiny Bible Institute, right?
Yeah.
And we just talk about it. And so often something that would be said is like, man, some of our best leaders came from DBI. And DBI was a very similar thing. It was, curriculum driven. It was a little bit of a commitment. They came, I think, for 3 hours on a Monday night, stuff like that. But it's like, man, you look and there's still some of our best leaders today. And that's not a coincidence and that's not an accident. What you invest into is so important. It's a, you know, you got to step back and say, hey, what are we investing into? And if, you know, really the care of the church and the oversight and even to some extent the maturing of the body is happening through captains and leaders,
right,
then man, that is a place that we need to be investing, because a pastor cannot take care of everybody. It's not going to work. It's not even our job. The Bible says that we are to equip the saints for the work of the ministry. We are not to do the work of the ministry. So Leadership Academy is a way in which we are really trying to equip the saints to do the work of the ministry so that things can grow and grow healthy. And so I think that's kind of the idea there. Mm-hmm. But I'll say this, anytime I've learned this, anytime you're working with leaders, they can't just be, I guess, what's called like paper tigers. The way I lead my teams, I tell all my leaders, you have two things if you belong here. You have real relationships, meaning like I really do love you and I want to hang out with you. But you also have real responsibility. Like I'm going to check up on you. There's going to be accountability brought. I love that they're not watching, but Glenn and Delphine are my captains for what we run. And I love them so much. Also, Bethany and Miss Jamie for YA. But I'll literally... They'll bring me like Google Sheet reports on like, what did your leader do? How'd the small group go? Who was shadowing them? Did they get coached afterwards? I just have yes or no questions. And every service, right before service, we'll look at it and we'll say, okay, like this is what happened last week in that group. You need to make sure that doesn't happen again or whatever. There's a real responsibility, but guess what? People like it because they're designed for it. I think so many times we're scared to ask stuff of our leaders. And I'm not saying over ask, but I'm saying don't be afraid to train people and then really give them responsibility, because that's God's plan for his church. It's not supposed to be just on one person. It's supposed to be on a pastor who's really helping leaders grow and those leaders who are helping other people grow. And so it's going to be an exciting season.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I've enjoyed pastoring millennials for that reason is I think the reason a lot of people tend to just do it is because there's three things you can do when you're trying to get work done. Four, maybe. You can do it yourself, right?
Right?
Or you can just dump it on somebody and say, hey, you know, some people do that with their wife. They just dump all the housework. They don't know how long it's going to take. They don't. and their marriage gets stressed because nobody really said, okay, how much time? Let's be fair to each other. So you can dump it. You can delegate it. That's what happened to most of us boomers is somebody put us in an office, delegated us to youth ministry, and we tried to figure it out. Or you can actually develop people. You can actually coach people. And when you talked about the huddles and the heart for the houses and hero meetings, what you're really doing is you're saying, I can't do it. It's impossible. And the people matter to me. I don't want to dump it on somebody. I don't even just want to delegate it, but I want to have a relationship. When you say relationship and responsibility, I want to have a relationship together and I want to see lives really change because of it. I want to give a word picture and then I'll give these guys the final minute. We'll pray for everybody. But, we all know society's broken. We know it's broken. We see it all around us all the time. So let's just take it to one broken person. Okay, how are we going to help one broken person? Well, if their parents are dysfunctional, that's not going to work. I mean, if their parents are good, the brokenness will go away. But if not, then we could say, well, maybe Child Protective Services has to take this person away. And maybe if they had a good foster parent, that kid would get help. Or maybe if somebody adopted them, boy, that would be awesome. That person's child that person's life could be not broken. Or let's think about this. Maybe a teacher or maybe a coach, somebody who spends a lot of time with them. Mm-hmm. Maybe that person could take them from a broken place to where their life's really good. But I think what we forget is that God called the church family more than anything else. Mm. And we want to set a culture that when somebody comes into our place, and listen, all you have to do is look at baby dedications to see how much brokenness there is, how many babies that we dedicate. You know, a lot of brokenness in the home. Mm-hmm. And so I think what we're realizing, I love millennials for this, you guys are so community driven and so connection driven, and we're realizing the church is God's answer to that. Mm-hmm. We probably can't find enough foster parents or teachers or coaches, but if the church is the church, man, how much brokenness can be changed. And so we have policies here. There's one thing I'm thinking about changing, because I heard another church said this and I thought it was kind of cool. Mm-hmm. And that is that they tell their members 15 minutes before church belongs to me, to you. So if you want to see me, you have pastoral care, I'll be right here 15 minutes before church. But the 15 minutes after church belongs to visitors, so that they can get to know us and they can connect. And I thought, that's kind of a cool thought, you know? Yeah. But regardless of how you do it, I love this. We don't let our staff ever be in the office during from 8:20 to 1 o'clock, from 6:30 to 9 o'clock on Wednesdays. That's the people's time, man. We don't let our staff stay in offices. Yeah. And it's because we're trying to get this whole process in place. And psychologists have said this, and it's so true. They said there are two kinds of people that will never help a broken person. The person's not going to get the help if this is the environment. If you have exasperators, they're not going to get help, because it's not just all about telling them what to do. People have feelings. They need love. They need supported. But the other person that won't help them is an enabler, somebody who just lets them keep doing the same thing over and over again, because it really is insanity to keep doing the same thing and thinking results are going to be different. So what happens when they come to church? This is what I love. When you have a good next step process and people see that there's somebody whose life is blessed of God, and they say, I promise you this can happen for you. And what you become is you become not an enabler, not an exasperator. You become an example, and you become an empowering person to them. And lives begin to change. And it's so fun to do that from the pulpit, but it's even more fun to do it with a community of people that you live your life with. I mean, I think the thing that I never, like, I knew when I started pastoring, I'd find a lot of joy in bringing people to Christ, because I'm a first generation, fully devoted follower in my family. So I know what it was like to come, and I was at the I need saved point when I came to church. So I knew that multiplying the joy of that would be a big thrill of pastoring. And I knew that maturing people in God's word would be a thrill too, because I started again at such a low level and came up. But what I never realized when I first started pastoring was how much joy I would find by relating to the mature sheep who helped me take care of the other sheep. Yeah. That might be my deepest joy. Sometimes I'll hear they're in the hospital, and it's not work for me to say, I don't want to go home. I'm going to go by the hospital, see this person, just check on them, because that's church, right?
For sure. Sure it is.
Well, any closing thoughts?
I mean, I love that we're talking about this, and I get passionate about just the thought of, you know, that someone can walk onto our campus for the first time, be welcomed, be greeted, and that there can be just a, you know, a path for them to go from a guest to a mature Christian making a difference for the kingdom. And I think that, I mean, we cannot do that on our own. We can't do that. They can come and be a part of services, and they can definitely grow. They can definitely do all those things. But to be able to have this in place where you can learn about God, you can learn about your gifts, you can have people in your life who are caring for you. And guess what? One day you can be one of those people who's doing that for other people. Mm-hmm. I think that's church. And like you said, people need that. You know, they're not getting it at home all the time. They're not. So, you know, I'm excited about this season for us. And I know so many of you guys are doing such a great job of that as well. And hopefully, even if it's just one small thing that was said today, you're encouraged to go and be the church. And man, bring people from guest to maturity.
I agree. I guess if I had any closing thought, it'd be that I think it's cool the church can kind of redefine what family really means.
Yeah.
In a day and age where when people hear family, they don't necessarily think positive thoughts Well, God gave us that name too, so we get to redefine what family means for so many people. And I think that's, you know, one of the most powerful missions you could have today. So,
that's what Abraham was told to do, right?
Yeah,
refamily the earth. That's Daniel Grothy. I just stole his phrase, but refamily the earth. Well, hey, I want to pray for you. Lord, I thank you for these pastors. And Lord, I thank you, Lord, that I know you've called us to be a part of this. And I'm grateful that they're a part of this in each other's lives. That, Lord, celebrating the significance, Lord, of pastors and their teams. Lord, I just pray, Lord, that on every team that's listening, Lord, it'll be such a joy to be working together because they're celebrating each other's significance well. Lord, and then to nurture potential. Lord, help us align our organization so the potential of people gets nurtured really, really well. And then, Lord, to have refreshing relationships. Sometimes we think we're tired, but we're really not. Paul said he felt pretty tired, but the coming of Titus is what refreshed him. So, Lord, I just pray for pastors today that you'll help them, God, love the significance you put in their soul, not compare themselves to others. Lord, you'll help them, God, bring forth the potential that you have, Lord, and that you put in them. And, Lord, that you'll help them have the kind of refreshing relationships, Lord, that you've called them to. And Lord, as that happens, we know that it's your desire, according to Ephesians 3, not just to fulfill our dreams, but God, to exceed them. And Father, we pray that for that, for every pastor that's listening today. God, I pray you'll anoint their weekend service. When they stand in the pulpit, Lord, let people know God's with them. Let hearts be touched. Let people take next steps because of the things that are shared. And Lord, just thank you for every person who answered the call, who's given it their very best. And Lord, it's just a privilege to be a part of it. We thank you for it. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Hey, knock it out of the park this weekend. Love you guys.
See ya.